You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, political expert and radio broadcaster Jay Amernick, and me, journalist in all media Heather Vale Goss, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. Welcome to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vale on today, June 25th. Welcome to a balmy summer afternoon, summer morning, if you're here in the Pacific time zone. And I am here with one of my co-hosts. Normally we have two co-hosts. We have Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Rick Raddatz is not on the call right now. He may be joining us later. In the meantime, Jay Amernick is here. He's a strategic planner, helping his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. And he also serves as the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business in the U.S., and his development labs create smartphone apps and inventions. Rick Raddatz, who is one of the backbones and the creative force behind the idea for this show, is a serial entrepreneur with a degree in philosophy. He talks about his political development, which is called The Solution, as well as Pentonomics, which is the philosophy behind The Solution. I'm Heather Vale, also known as The Unwrapper. I'm a freelance interviewer and writer who works in all media and specifically online. So welcome to the show. Jay, good to have you here.
Yes, I'm glad to be here.
Unfortunately, by the way, if you're watching the Hangout, Jay is not on the Hangout right now. That's some kind of technical glitch, so you're stuck watching me. But
anyway, but they can hear me.
They can hear you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And during the break, maybe we'll try to get you back on the Hangout.
Okay.
But anyway, so Jay, how's your week been going?
It's good. It's been it's been very busy. I have my other show, the Happy Hour with the Cravat Pack, and we've we're looking to getting back. We do a live cocktail party every week. We're looking to get back out into to do some pool parties and some other venues. We're very excited about it. So that's been my weekend. And last night was a Yelp Elite event here in Las Vegas at Brooklyn Bowl. And I made a joke on Facebook, and everybody took it very seriously. I said, it was nerd bowling, which is what it was. I said, and I just won first place for biggest nerd. The funny thing is that I wasn't in costume, but I was actually joking. I actually, didn't win or was entered. So. But everyone took it very seriously.
So. Maybe your sense of humor is just a little too dry for Facebook.
It was very dry. Some people got it. But a lot of people were like, oh, I feel bad.
I assumed it was a joke.
Yes, of course.
But yeah, it was funny. It was.
Yeah, I mean, there were people in there, full on, tape on the glasses, the whole thing, So how was I going to compete with that?
Yeah.
But how about you? What's going on?
Oh, just, keeping busy, going from project to project. So it's been a bit of a crazy week. Saturday, I covered the Gin Blossoms concert for a local publication here called the Las Vegas Informer.
Oh, very good.
And Roger Bennett, my photographer, they let us have photo passes. So we were like right up the front for getting photographs of the band during the first few songs. So we got some awesome photography and it was a fun show.
Good.
Yeah.
It was down in Fremont. In Henderson. Henderson.
Yeah, this one was at Henderson. The week before, I covered Three Doors Down, which was at Fremont.
Right.
Fremont, I like the shows at Fremont because they have a good vibe. Like, everyone is really into it, but it's really hard to go anywhere. Like, you got to fight your way through the crowd if you, God forbid, you have to leave and take a restroom break or something. It's like, good luck getting back to your friends. But
once you're in, you're
stuck. Yeah. Whereas Henderson Pavilion, I mean, you can come and go, it's reserved seating, but because of that, like, it just doesn't have the same energy. Like, people aren't so into the show. They're not up dancing and stuff because they can just sit there and watch. So yeah, pros and cons, yin and yang.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've been to a couple shows down at Fremont. Actually, I enjoy it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's another one coming up in about a month. Everclear's doing their Summerland tour, which I went to last year. But they always tour with different bands. This year they've got Soul Asylum. Last year they had Live, and I forget who else. But, yeah, it was a really good show last year, so I'm going to go again.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Very good. And all right. Top story time?
Yeah, let's do the top story. Now, this is something, this story is something that we've been talking about, so I know you're going to have a lot to say on this. So, Washington's political establishment offered a sober assessment of the Tea Party movement today after six-term Senator Thad Cochran's narrow win in Mississippi. They said the upstarts are down, but not out. You can't underestimate the anti-Washington feeling, which translates into anti-incumbency, and it's out there and it's viable, Senator John McCain told reporters at a breakfast today organized by the Wall Street Journal. Still, McCain welcomed Cochran's comeback win as historic after a nasty, costly primary that forced a three-week sprint to yesterday's runoff. With 99% of precincts reporting, Cochran held a 6,373 vote advantage over Tea Party favorite Chris McDaniel, who has refused to concede the race. Unsuccessful in earlier Republican primaries in Kentucky, Georgia, and North Carolina, outside conservative organizations and Tea Party groups had invested millions in Mississippi in hopes of knocking out Cochran. They have very few chances to reverse the trend in the remaining contests that are happening before November's elections, and yesterday's results left them fuming. Taylor Budowich, executive director of Tea Party Express, said, unfortunately, in Mississippi, nefarious campaign tactics seem to have won the day over ideas and a bold conservative vision. We thank Senator Chris McDaniel for courageously standing up to the political machine. In politics, the righteous are not always victorious, but Americans across the country appreciate the values that his campaign was built upon. In another setback for the Tea Party, two-term Republican James Lankford of Oklahoma won the GOP nomination in the race to succeed Senator Tom Coburn, who's stepping down with 2 years left in his term. In the solidly Republican state, Lankford is all but assured of becoming the next senator. The Republican establishment blames the Tea Party movement and outside groups for costing it Senate seats and majority control in 2010 and 2012. Leaders in Washington were determined to avoid the same fate in this election cycle when they have a legitimate shot at netting the six seats to control the Senate. Cochran's win goes a long way to helping the GOP achieve its goal. In a last-ditch effort, Cochran had reached out to traditionally Democratic voters, Black people, and union members who could cast ballots in the runoff. That possible factor in Cochran's victory was cited by critics in days and weeks to come. Now, in November, he'll be facing Democrat Travis Childers, a former congressman in the heavily Republican state. So this is a case of, this is something you've been bringing up for weeks, Jay, is that, you know, turnout, it really does make a difference. People can win by a few votes. And they're saying that if the turnout had not been as it was in this election, which was much higher than it has been in past years, that it wouldn't have turned out the same way. So what do you think?
Yeah, there are two things. One, I want to, you know, thinking a lot about history, and, you know, when the economy is bad, as it is now, that is what gives rise to sort of fringe political parties. And yes, I am going to call the Tea Party a fringe political party, and I'm going to call the 99 percenters or whatever they're calling them. They're not even that organized. They are a fringe organization as well. And, you know,
Fringe, does that mean any but the top two, any but the big ones? Like if they're not Democrat, they're not Republican, they're fringe.
The top two represent the mainstream of American political thought, which is sort of any, if you look at any Gallup poll, it is somewhat center, right. Is where people are on most issues. Most Americans are quite reasonable. And the historical example of this, and before everybody gets hysterical, I'm not comparing the Tea Party to Nazis, and I'm not comparing the 99% people to Trotskyites or anything like that. But that is it. It was 1930s Germany, because the economy was so terrible, gave rise to these extreme parties. you know, so that's sort of the one thing, sort of that's why they exist now. But the one thing I thought was kind of was funny was the Tea Party blaming Thad Cochran's win on the fact that he reached out across the aisle to Democratic voters.
Well, they said nefarious campaign tactics.
Oh, I thought someone said that he reached out to.
Oh, he did. He did.
Right, they blamed that he reached out. So that's exactly what a politician should do, because he represents them. Once he gets to Washington, he represents them. He is no longer, a party faithful in so much as he represents his constituency. So
they said, the critics were saying that, yeah, that was probably why he won, is because he reached out to those people. Yeah.
Which is exactly what he should do.
Yeah.
For them to cry foul on that is that to me is nefarious, and that is ridiculous. That again goes back to sort of why we kind of decry ideologues on this show, because they have it so in their head, right, that what they believe is factual and truthful, and anything else is not only wrong, but if you believe it, you are a lunatic, and shouldn't even be engaged. So that's the problem with, again, the Tea Party on the right, even though they claim they're not right, they're right as can be, and then 99%ers on the left, even though they claim they're not left, and they are left wing. The whole thing is kind of, curious. Thad Cochran is someone who's served for some time, and he's done a good job representing his constituency, and clearly the people have, seen through to elect him again.
Yeah. It was a close race, though. And
right, but, well, so. Of course, because, but again, that, well, that goes back to, you have to acknowledge that people are quite upset.
Yeah.
They're upset for a great many reasons. I was thinking, when then Senator Obama and Senator Biden ran, when they first ran against Senator McCain and Sarah Palin, I remember at the convention, Joe Biden gave a speech about gas prices, which were $2. And he was saying how he met some guy, and the guy said, Joe asked him how much it cost to fill up his tank. He says, I don't know, because I never have enough to fill it up. Okay, so at that point in time, gas was about $2 a gallon. It is now hovering around $4 a gallon. So people are mad about that. And by the way, people on the, Democrats are mad about that. To run on gas prices are too high, and then for them to double under your watch is problematic.
Yeah.
So, in general, I would say there's not much that the government can do about it, but there is something they can do about it. They could put a moratorium on the tax on gasoline. If they eliminated the tax on gasoline right now, it would probably come down about $1 a gallon, not to $1 a gallon, but probably come down to closer to $3 and sometimes hovering into the two and change realm. So,
yeah. Okay.
So there's a general dissatisfaction in Washington with, again, what we would call politics as usual, them saying anything they want to get elected, which also goes back to, my original point about them, that it gives rise to these sort of, I don't like to use the word extreme, fringe, I would rather say, because extreme, to me, extreme is, is the KKK. That's extreme. In reality, I mean, and these guys are just on the far right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And okay. And 99% is up, let's say, on the far left.
Right. Left.
Yeah. Correct.
Correct. <Okay. laughs>
And helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to get Jay back on the Hangout, and we're going to talk some more about this kind of stuff, as well as we will have Inside Perspective with Jay Amernick. And we'll be right back on The Political Fix.
You
Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-host, Jay Amrinick. And before the break, we were talking about the Tea Party losing out in Mississippi to the Republican Party and everyone being up in arms. And it was a very close race, which is something that Jay has been talking about for some time now. Several weeks he's been mentioning that if you get out and vote, your vote actually can make a difference regardless of what you might be led to believe. So some of these races, in this case, part of the primary election, some of them are very close. So, and these close elections can make a huge difference as far as which party is going to control the Senate and that kind of thing. So we don't have Jay on the hangout, but we do have Jay on the radio show. Jay, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you
hear
me?
Okay, good. We do, yeah. Cool. Okay, as long good. As you're there, that's the most important.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, what does this mean for people who kind of, you know, still have the attitude that, oh, it doesn't make a difference anyway, like, there's no point in voting anyway?
Probably not too much, because they believe that very strongly, and it's not going to change their mind, which is unfortunate, but it should. And by the way, it's going out to vote. It's not, you know, getting your tonsils taken out. No one's asking you to be anesthetized. No, you show up at what is usually a school or somebody's garage, very close to your own home, and it doesn't take any time at all to do. So literally, what's the big deal?
A garage? They hold elections in a garage?
Yeah. When I lived in Los Angeles, because there are way too many people living in that sewer of a city, and they have to have it, and the schools are completely dilapidated. So people will sometimes have it in their garages.
Interesting.
I voted many times in people's garage.
Huh.
At least I think I voted. I'm not sure what. Maybe.
Yeah. Who knows what happened to them after that, right?
Yeah. No. It was.
They went out with the trash.
Yeah. Exactly. No. It was all good.
So people can volunteer. Yeah, let's use my garage.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, and they have to. It gets checked out, and they have to make sure they cover everything up. If they, you know, if there's any, you know, any political signs, you can't have any within a certain whatever it is.
So their neighbors can't have a lawn sign out for one specific candidate?
The neighbors may be close enough, or maybe far enough away. I'm not entirely sure. But inside their garage, there's definitely, I've always seen stuff like covered up on the walls.
Interesting.
So that may not be political stuff. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, you probably don't even want to know what that was.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about the inside perspective. So Jay is a political insider. He has worked in Washington, D.C. He has worked with lobbyists and various political parties and talked with them, strategized with them. So we have a segment that we call Inside Perspective with Jay Amrinick. Take it away, Jay.
Thank you. This week, it is not the crime, it's the cover-up. And you know, there are all these scandals going on. I don't even know if I want to call them scandals, but these things going on right now, whether it's Benghazi, whether it's the IRS, whatever it is. And after a while, Benghazi specifically actually, is really more about the cover up, which was the day after that, this attack happened on our consulate in Benghazi, which is in Libya, it's not the capital of Libya is Tripoli, so that's the larger city there. But we have a consulate in Benghazi, or had one, and I'm not entirely sure why, but we did. And there was an attack, and the next day, Susan Rice, who was then, what was she back then? She was a national security advisor. Went out on 5 Sunday talk shows, which is, you know, Meet the Press, Fox News Sunday, Face the Nation, and a couple more. I can't remember what else there is. But anyway, and said that it was a video that inflamed everybody, got everybody hysterical.
Okay.
All right. Turned out to not be true, even though now that the guy that they've captured is questioning is saying that it was that. But I mean, really, you know, do we really want to, you know, I don't really want to take this guy at his word, quite frankly, because it doesn't, because what the evidence has shown so far is that everything was pre-planned and these guys knew what they were doing. You know, you don't just, you know, planning an attack like this just doesn't sort of spontaneously happen. So the big deal now is why was this said and how far does it go up? And I know, you know, nobody wants to quote. Okay. So, you know, Watergate, you know, famously was the same thing. You know, what did the president know and when did he know it? You know, so I think that's, you know, that's sort of the issue here. You know, the IRS thing is also, it looks like they targeted Tea Party groups and sort of made it very difficult for them to get their 501c3 or 501c4 status. And specifically targeted conservative groups. Lois Lerner, who, you know, again, this start off, it was a couple rogue agents in an Ohio office. Turns out that's not the case. And then Lois Lerner, her emails miraculously have disappeared, which is, you know, it's just, I mean, if anybody's buying that, you know, I basically want to have a touch of what you're smoking, because that doesn't make any sense. So, and I'm not taking a political sense. I have no idea what her emails say. I have no idea if in fact what the IRS is accused of is true. But again, it's more about the cover up. And you know, this would be famously with Anthony Weiner, you know?
Yeah.
So he sent dirty pictures to his mistress. Okay. What's the big deal? The big deal is that he was going to impanel a congressional hearing on people hijacking your Twitter account. Okay, but he was going to spend millions of your taxpayer dollars to cover his own ass.
Okay, but didn't he just accidentally hit Twitter instead of text when he was?
Again, it's not the crime. It's the cover-up. The cover-up is, I didn't do it, and someone hijacked my Twitter account, and we're gonna spend millions of your taxpayer dollars to protect you, the people, and to get to the bottom of this.
And it's not my wiener.
Well, whatever it may have been in that whole thing, but again, it goes back to that. And I know I seem to be picking on the Democrats a little bit this week, but they seem to be the ones that get involved in these scandals or situations and don't sort of try to cover them up. You know,
Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton.
Okay, yeah. Exactly. And right. And the president of the United States lied to a grand jury.
Yeah.
So, that, you know.
Well, it depends on your definition. Like, he might have been thinking sexual relations means intercourse. And they may not have technically had intercourse. So
I will actually quote Dennis Miller on this one. Actually, what the President Clinton said was he didn't think that he lied because the act was being done to him, so he didn't have the relations. Okay, right? Dennis Miller said the last time I saw balls that big, they were rolling after Indiana Jones in a cave. That is such like lawyer doublespeak. Let's be honest here. A grown man knows damn well what the grand jury meant when they asked him, and he lied. So okay, so you know, then people, well, should the question have been asked in the first place? Whatever. Irrelevant. What's relevant is that the president of the United States lied to a grand jury.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and again, and everyone who's getting hysterical out there, don't worry, next week I'm going to pick on the right. I'm picking on the Republicans next week. Don't, everyone, take it easy, everybody. It's quite, you know, again, it's, like I said, not the crime, it's the cover-up. If Bill Clinton had come out and said, yes, I did this with Monica Lewinsky, it probably would not have come to anything.
Actually, yeah, what would have been wrong with him just saying, yeah, it happened, whatever?
He would have caught a lot of grief because he did it in the Oval Office, which is, you know, that I personally find shameful. you know, had he done it somewhere else, I would have been like, well, he's, you know, he is who he is. And you know, that's between he and the woman. And
okay, but let's be honest here. Don't you think that more than one president has had sex of some sort in the Oval Office? I mean, like,
okay, well,
it's a powerful room.
I can tell you a couple things. A lot of presidents will not let you take your jacket off in the Oval Office. A lot of presidents will not let you curse in the Oval Office. Most presidents will not let you bring a paper cup into the Oval Office. Huh. You pour your coffee into like an actual, you know, China cup when you walk in there. That's the reverence they have for that room and the office. Now, I'm not saying that President Clinton didn't. I just think that he had that was not a good show.
That was not respectful. Yes, it was not respectful for history.
Right. I mean, the White House and the Oval Office specifically are really the symbols of America.
Yeah.
So it's, you know.
I know, but because of that, there's a certain power to that room, and power is sexy, just saying, you know. Like.
I agree, but it doesn't mean that you.
Okay. I know.
That you do the Oval Office.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, it's not like the guy doesn't have other places at his disposal, you know.
Right. I mean, yeah. Very true.
I mean, let's be honest here. You know, look, the Mile High Club on Air Force One. To me, that's like bucket list. You know.
Really.
I look. I've been in the Oval Office. I've never been in Air Force One.
Okay. I don't know. It's like the whole Mile High Club thing. It's like those bathrooms are really small. Like,
but it's this. Why Air Force One? It's a flying hotel. That thing.
Okay.
And the president has his own kind of suite.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's different.
Yeah. It's a. Yeah, it's a great setup.
Okay.
I don't know how you go back to like flying commercial after flying on Air Force One.
Have you even seen the inside, like live?
No.
Okay.
No, so they're not going to let somebody like me near that.
So how are you going to? Why is it on your bucket list? How are you going to mark that off your bucket list?
I'm not, unless I get elected president of the United States, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah. So, yeah, you might need a new bucket list that you can actually achieve.
I didn't say it was my. I said it's bucket list stuff.
Okay.
I didn't say it was my bucket
list. Not for you. Okay. It's not on your.
Not yet, anyway.
Okay.
Who knows? We may decide to.
Well, actually, you could accomplish it if we get a female president and you happen to have relations with her.
Yeah.
It could happen.
Yeah, that could happen.
It could happen.
But not on Air Force One. I would have to, because it's you. Not anybody can get on Air Force One. There's all kinds of security clearance.
So the president couldn't bring her boyfriend?
He would have to go through a screening.
Okay.
I've no doubt I would pass, but
yeah.
It's, you know. But
exactly.
She couldn't just say one day, oh, we're going to, you know, we're taking a trip to Belarus, you know, and you know, I'm bringing Jay along.
Because he's got this bucket list thing going on.
And I am of the people, and I'm going to make it come true.
Okay. Let's take another break. And when we come back, if you want to call in and you want to chat with us and you want to have your say, give us a call at 888-627-6008. And we'll get to your call when we come back. Once again, that's 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail here with my co-host, Jay Amernick. We still don't have him on the hangout. If you happen to be watching our behind the scenes, all you're seeing is me today. We had a little bit of a technical glitch. So you're going to see me, you're going to hear me, but go over to the radio feed if that's what you're doing and you're actually wanting to listen to it. It's right beside there at politicalfixradio.com. Go to the live radio feed and you can hear Jay and I both talking there.
Yeah.
Now, Jay, before the break, we were talking about your segment, Inside Perspective. You said it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. And you had a bunch of examples of government crimes that were covered up after the fact. With a lot of smoke and mirrors.
Sometimes crimes, sometimes improprieties. In the case of Anthony Weiner, that was an impropriety. As far as I know, it's not illegal to send a picture of your privates to your mistress.
Right. Sexting.
Am I correct? I'm pretty sure.
Not illegal. Yeah. Right. However, in his situation, it was viewed as a crime.
No. It was viewed as a scandal. The crime was the crime was that he was, in my mind, because he was attempting to misappropriate government funds in order to cover it up.
Right.
Just so everybody doesn't get a stereotype, out here in Nevada, we had Senator John Ensign. I forgot about this. Who had an affair and then attempted to buy her silence with like some of his campaign money, I believe. If I'm wrong, I someone correct me, but I think that basically he tried to pay her off with what was not his money to do so.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that becomes a crime. I mean, before that, it's not something that's criminally chargeable or prosecutable. However, we could call it a moral crime, these things.
The terminology would be an impropriety that will be used by your political enemies both during re-election time. Okay, go back to the small p, the large p. And make your life a living hell, up to that.
Right. Okay. So because these sorts of things happen in government and because a lot of money is spent covering up ridiculous things, don't you think that's one of the reasons why we have what you call fringe parties like the Tea Party, who are trying to minimize government control?
Minimize government control is one thing that if you don't think that they're going to be involved in their own improprieties and scandals, once in office, you are,
So is this like par for the course? Like as soon as people are in office, they naturally start creating scandals and covering them up?
No, because not all of them do it,
Okay. But you just said that if the Tea Party were in control.
A certain percentage will.
Okay. What is that percentage?
Anybody in politics, as far as having an illicit affair, having whatever.
Okay, like 10%.
I don't know the percent.
Okay.
There's never been as far as I know, Gallup has never done a poll on that.
Okay. So speaking of cover up, I mean, we were talking about the Monica Lewinsky affair earlier, and it seems to me that there was a huge cover-up immediately following that, which is, hey, let's go to war. And everyone forgot about Monica Lewinsky.
No, that falls under the category, actually, from the public perspective of chaos theory. Okay, it may seem that way. That's actually that's actually incorrect.
You don't think the timing was specifically calculated to take the attention off the Monica Lewinsky scandal?
No, because it doesn't work like that.
Really? Have you ever seen Wag the Dog?
That is a Hollywood movie.
I know. And Hollywood often tells the truth in disguise as entertainment.
No. Hollywood manipulates a story and thinks, what if? Okay. The truth of the matter is there are the Joint Chiefs of Staff who are the checks and balances for the president if he decides to go off on a flight of fancy and go to war.
Okay.
Their responsibility is to, yes, they serve at the pleasure of the president, most certainly. But if that was the case, and it's been a long enough time since that, if they were somehow bullied into going along with it because this is covering up the affair. Look, how do I put this? If the president comes to the Joint Chiefs and says, I want to do this military action, they basically say why, and they can sometimes say it doesn't make any sense to do it. And he has to then justify it to them. And they're not idiots, these guys. They have to buy it.
Okay.
That's why they're there. So all this nonsense of, you know, and even with George W. Bush, he went after Iraq because of, you know, Saddam Hussein and his father had a thing, and that's such nonsense.
What about the theory that 9/11 was an inside job?
That's also nonsense.
Okay.
It's also pure nonsense. Okay. First of all, I believe it was Popular Mechanics showed exactly how it worked.
Okay.
And people like to do that because there are people out there who are just nuts and they can't believe that, you know, things like this happen. The conspiracy theorists are so out of their minds on the 9/11 was an inside job thing. Take a look at the people who are perpetrating that concept. You can go down and see them on Fremont Street. These guys don't look like they've had a shower in about 4 weeks.
Okay, that's a generalization, though.
There is nobody who is a serious thinker in the world of politics, in the world of public policy, who thinks that 9/11 was an inside job. It is people who are crackpots. it's nonsense. Pure nonsense.
Even though Bush had long-term friendly relations with what was his name? Bin Laden.
He did not have long-term relationships with Bin Laden.
Yeah, their families were friends.
No. Keep in mind, Osama bin Laden was the ne'er-do-well. I mean, he's the one that like sort of got out of the family business and went rogue. The bin Laden construction family were at times contracted through the Carlyle Group, which was George H.W. Bush's company that he served on the board of. But that has nothing to do with it. It's all, again, it goes back to chaos theory and, you know, what someone would call bad optics, but it's not.
Okay. So it just seems sometimes that something happens that could have been calculated and manipulated and meant to cover up something else and meant to take the attention off of something else. But you're saying it's all an illusion and don't believe it.
No, not always. There are things one could do if they want to obfuscate a scandal. Absolutely.
Okay.
But
well, give me an example of one that you think did.
Going to war is not one of them.
Okay. Give me an example of something that was orchestrated to take the attention off of a scandal.
Well, orchestrated is actually too strong a word.
Okay.
Because usually the president basically just sort of changes the talking points and starts talking about something else or gives a speech about something else.
So investigating the security of Twitter would be an example of what you're talking about.
No, that was actually a cover-up of his related specifically to his impropriety. And
okay.
he was prepared to spend millions of taxpayer dollars to do so.
Didn't he think that, okay, the longer he spends focusing on that and talking about that, the longer people are going to talk about why he's doing that, the longer people are going to talk about his wiener picture. I mean, like...
I can't get into his head or know what he was thinking, but if in fact a crime was committed against you, against me, and nobody was doing anything about it, I'd be screaming at the top of my lungs until somebody did something about it.
Yeah.
So that is what he was pretending to do and hoping, you know, to God that, you know, that once you know, Twitter security, which I'm sure there are issues with it, was exposed, you know.
Exposed.
No, there's no double entendre intended there.
The thing is, okay, the way that phones are set up, when you go to share a picture, and then you choose whether you're going to share it by text or any number of your social media platforms, it's quite easy to press the wrong little icon. So
that's fine, but that's not a security issue. That's a user.
I know. Error. That's what, like, why even make it into, ooh, this is a security.
Because he was saying that wasn't him. That wasn't his private parts, and somebody hijacked his account. Somebody could do if they got a hold of your username and your password, correct?
That's true, yeah.
Right, so,
yeah,
so that's, they what could. That's what he was saying happened.
Okay.
Exactly.
He might as well have just said, oops, and be done with it. I mean, like, I don't know.
Because it's not the crime, it's the cover-up.
Okay.
And he said, yes, I'm having an affair, and my wife is pregnant. Yes, I'm a scumbag, I'm a dirtbag, and Oprah's probably going to do an episode about me now. Everybody would have said, okay. And it's New York, and he was, you know, his constituency loves him, and they probably would have said, okay, we're good with it. We don't care. You haven't broken any laws, whatever.
Yeah. That's why, right? I don't understand why you would make
because they are, one, you never want to give your enemy any kind of ammunition.
Okay.
Now, in doing so, he ended up giving his enemies far more ammunition than he ever could have.
Exactly.
Rent.
Exactly. And he brought way more attention to the picture and the incident than what would have happened if he just said, yeah, oops. Because know what? I think people relate to mistakes that other people make. They don't want to think that these people in power or celebrities, they don't want to think that they're perfect and they make no mistakes. People want to, it's like, oh, okay, they're just like me. They make mistakes too.
I'll give you an example. And actually, it's sort of a bad example because it turned out okay for this guy. But Clarence Thomas, everybody was talking about the Anita Hill thing, that he was, you know, inappropriate at the in the workplace, which seemed to be true. There didn't seem to be much of a cover up. There just seemed to be there was a hearing on it. But before that, the questioning, they asked him if he had ever smoked marijuana, and he said, "Yes, I smoked it once. Didn't do much for me. Next question." And nobody said boo.
Yeah.
Right? In versus Bill Clinton said, I did, but I didn't inhale. come on. And all everybody could talk about, that was like the biggest joke for the next, like, you know, month after that was, I didn't inhale.
Yeah, I know.
They talked about it more. If he said he smoked pot, it would be like, okay, well, he grew up in the 70s. Of course he did.
Yeah.
And that would have been the end of it, you know? Yeah. He's, you know, it's not like we were, you know, nobody was accusing him of being Tommy Chong. He tried it, you know, and the whole thing was that he did it in England when he was at Oxford. Was it Oxford he was at or Cambridge? It was Oxford.
I think Oxford, yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, I never broke the law on U.S. soil.
Okay.
Which, again, U.S. presidents, by the way, have broken the law before becoming president. A great many of them. That would have precluded him from being the nominee.
Okay.
It's just trust the American people a little bit and give us a little credit.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
The affair with the intern that he had was, he would have caught a lot of grief for it, but nobody would have been talking about impeachment.
Right. Exactly.
It would have just been, they would have thrown some barbs. It would have been very unpleasant for the First Lady, Hillary Rodham Clinton, and the Chelsea Clinton. But again, I'm sure it's no bed of roses being the first family anyway. I mean, it's a very difficult existence, actually.
Yeah, and you give up a lot of privacy.
You give up almost all your privacy.
Yeah. All right, well, let's take one final break. And when we come back, we'll wrap this up. We'll be right back with you on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail here with my co-host, Jay Amernick. And during the break, we were just talking with our producer, Doug, and nobody heard any of that because normally behind the scenes, you would have at least heard Jay if you were watching the Hangout behind the scenes, but yeah. we don't have Jay on the Hangout. So all you would have seen was me listening to them. But let's talk about what you just said, Jay. You were talking about the Chinese proverb, may you be cursed to live in interesting times.
That's right.
So are these interesting times in your opinion?
Oh, certainly.
So why is it a curse?
Because along with interesting comes peril and tribulation and that's lowercase tribulation for any biblical people out there.
Okay.
I'm not talking end of days here. But there's turmoil and things like that. And as a descriptive, I don't know whether it's a judgment to say interesting, or is interesting a judgment?
Like
what's interesting to somebody is not interesting to another.
That is very true. It's very subjective.
Okay. So, all right. So, but I think there's a consensus that these are interesting times, no matter what you're talking about, whether it's our technological breakthrough. You know, we all grew up watching, the science fiction shows and reruns of I was in reruns, some of the, Star Trek and Lost in Space and, you know, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, all those shows. And now what was once science fiction is becoming science.
You see, that's exactly what I was saying earlier about Hollywood. You just dismiss it all as, no, it's entertainment. But there is a kernel of truth in Hollywood entertainment.
No, it actually, you're actually proving my point. Because okay. what I said is Hollywood put something forth. First of all, it's always a mirror of society.
Yeah, okay? Art imitates life. Yes.
Okay.
And sometimes life imitates art.
Well, in this case, it inspired. Okay, so Hollywood created something in order to elicit an opinion or something like that. In the case of Star Trek, for instance, there are a great many sort of social economic issues that Gene Roddenberry tackled on that show.
Yes,
but,
a lot.
But also, you know, we developed the smartphone, the cell phone, which flipped. And the reason it flipped was because those guys watched Star Trek and they always saw flip the thing. That was part of the design. It made sense because it made the phone smaller. It made the phone basically fold in half.
Yeah.
It was also, you know, reminiscent of that. And it inspired people to sort of look beyond our world and our thinking and to make people sort of, okay, you know, these things will exist in the future. Now, usually Hollywood gets it quite wrong because there are a great many movies that, you know, you will see take place in, you know, that were made in the 50s or 60s. You know, the year is 1994.
Yeah.
Flying cars and jetpacks are everywhere. And it's like, okay, you guys got that one wrong.
Well, even the book 1984, that didn't come true in 1984. But, you know, a lot of that has come true in later years. They're a little off on the timing on a lot of this stuff, but they're not necessarily off on all the concepts. In fact, a lot of the concepts they get right.
Yeah. Well, because they recognize certain things, and a lot of it is technology run amok. That was certainly George Orwell's thing, was the combination of the ability to be able to spy on us and the desire of a, I don't want to say tyrannical, I don't like using that term to describe our government, because I don't think it's accurate. There are real tyrants in the world, and our government doesn't fall under attack.
Right. But, yeah. However, there are security cameras everywhere.
That is true.
Yeah.
But again, you know, Adolf Hitler was a tyrant. Joseph Stalin was a tyrant. Attila the Hun was a tyrant. Let's put it in perspective here. So that's why I don't like using those terms to describe it. But it is problematic. That's the bet. Actually, again, going back to Star Trek, that was a very hopeful look at the future. We were past racial problems and
yeah, they know, had a Russian driving he drove the ship, didn't he? Or he was at least helping Sulu, run it.
Sulu, I can't. Oh my, this is like the nerd outing of me. Sulu was actually the helmsman. He was the one steering the ship.
Okay.
I believe Chekhov would have been in charge of like the shields, photon torpedoes, and phasers. And oh my God, this is why I can't get a date. Anyway. But that's it. But yes, he was sort of, and again, I mean, it's sort of funny to think because it was the idea was that you had, first of all, you had Lieutenant O'Hara, who was, the communications officer, a female African American, but still wearing a miniskirt. So, Gene wasn't full on, Gloria Steinem on us, but.
Okay. But if you got it flaunted, there's nothing wrong with dressing sexy.
Oh, no, I believe me. Part of the, again,
in fact, the right to dress sexy is actually,
well, this
that's a right we should embrace. Like, that's not something to say, it's putting down women. No, that's female empowerment right there.
Well, it was a uniform, so she had to wear it. Although there was another uniform that was sort of a little more modest, but
in Next Generation they wore cat suits.
Yeah. But again, one of the reasons I watched as a kid was not only because of the adventure and, the sense of wonder, but quite frankly, because it was Barbara Luna wearing next to nothing. It was Lee Merriweather scantily clad. So yes, Gene Roddenberry, you got me on both counts.
Sex sells. It is what it is. I don't consider sex to be, or sexuality to be, a negative thing. So,
no, I don't either.
Yeah,
but
I know a lot of people do. But
no, and one could look at it and just say, look, okay, so the guys are all wearing long pants, long sleeve shirts. The women are in these mini skirts, and that's the uniform.
So,
well, I agree. and if you look at Next Generation and Voyager and Deep Space Nine, they're all, actually the male and female uniforms are pretty much the same.
Yeah, actually, the men are wearing cat suits too. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, they were like kind of two piece. I think only Troy had like a full on.
Yeah,
cat
suit. Because she's not an officer. She was. My God, I'm going to get geeked out again. She was the ship's counselor, by the way, which was also sort of a new agey thing to add.
Yeah.
Captain Kirk never talked about his feelings.
But Captain Kirk expressed his feelings in many other ways.
Yes, and also keep in mind these shows, yes, even though it was about the future and hoped for a more enlightened time, it was still of the time it was made.
Yes.
Which was the late 60s. And and you can't go too far out of that boundary.
However, they did. They had the first multiracial kiss.
Yes, they did.
So yes. Yeah, they pushed envelopes and they paved the way for other shows to come. Yeah,
absolutely did. Well, and Whoopi Goldberg tells the very famous story of when she first saw Nichelle Nichols, and Lieutenant O'Hara went screaming into the other room and said, "Mommy, there's a black woman on TV and she's not a nurse or a maid." and that inspired her. That's a great story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we have
a whole show to Star Trek and the socioeconomic implications of it.
You know what, though, Jay? There are women out there who appreciate that. And so this is not the reason why you can't get a date. So take that out of your mind.
I was kidding. I was being funny.
Okay. All right. You can't think negative. Okay. I know you better than that, but anyway. All right, so we have filled up another hour on the political fix. Anyone wanting to listen to our back episodes, you can listen to the radio archives, and you can also look at the behind-the-scenes videos on the Google Hangouts. All of that is at politicalfixradio.com. That's politicalfixradio.com. On behalf of myself and Jay Amernick and the missing Rick Raddatz, thank you for joining us on this past hour, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vale Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.